KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. I'm Michael Krasny. Over the past few days, global stock markets have taken a plunge, causing alarm among brokers and economists and concern in the White House, according to an official statement issued yesterday. Today, as U.S. stocks continue to seesaw, we'll talk about what these fluctuations mean for the global economy and for President Trump, who claimed that the strong markets were indicators of his administration's success. That's all next, after this. Welcome to this morning's forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The Dow Jones Industrial Average plunged 666 points on Friday, followed by a startling 1,175-point drop yesterday. Today, after an earlier rebound, trading is volatile. And as international markets follow suit, analysts are wondering if we're at the beginning of a global economic downturn. Forum dives into what's behind this latest stock market downturn in this hour and how it will affect overall economic health and whether President Trump, who took credit for the economy's strength, will suffer from its decline. Let me tell you who is joining us. We want to talk global stock markets with Annie Massa, who is a reporter for Bloomberg News and joins us from New York City. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. Good to have you. And we also want to say hi and good morning to Christopher Thornburg, who joins us this morning from Los Angeles. He's the founder and founding partner of Beacon Economics and director of the Center for Economic Forecasting at UC Riverside. And welcome back to Forum, Christopher Thornburg. Good to have you.
And good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. And let's just begin with the fact that we're starting to inch back up today. I mean, is this just a correction that's inevitable, a hiccup, a kind of rough patch that we've been through here?
It's a hiccup. Look, over the last year and a half, there's been really an amazing low level of volatility in the markets, but that's the exception, not the rule. Since the Great Recession came to an end, the stock market has been excessively volatile. This will end up being the fifth double-digit downturn in the market since the middle of 2009, when typically in these economic expansions we'll see one of these major downturns. So my argument is there's nothing here except for a continuation of these really odd sort of market dynamics where on a periodic basis you just see this giant dump.
Do you think that it has something to do with timing? I mean, I was struck by the fact that a new head of the Fed was sworn in and also that the Department of Labor came out with these numbers of wages rising, which seemed to cause some concern.
Yeah, well, I mean, You're exactly right. It goes back to this January employment report that was released last Friday. And there were some numbers there that were pretty stark. I mean, the increase in nominal incomes was a big number, to say the very least. But let's stop for a second and ask yourself, was there really any information in that January release that would actually generate, shall we say, true changes in economic trends as the market might see? And the answer is no. First of all, most of the trends we see in the numbers have been going on for any number of years now. And January's number was at some level some continuation of those trends. And the other thing is a couple numbers that did stand out in January. It's worth noting that January employment numbers are incredibly unreliable. Remember, we're coming off the Christmas season. There's already an enormous downturn in employment as we're coming off the big seasonal employment rush. Economists try to seasonally adjust these numbers in order to try and extract, if you will, the trend from that just massive month-to-month volatility that's always there. And candidly, it's tough for us to do that because the numbers are so large, and it's just not conducive. You can't look at a January number and pretend that means anything. When you consider this in totality, what you see is not so much that there was anything new, any new information that we could put any kind of true reliance on. What you see is a stock market that is incredibly excessively, if you will, reactive to any kind of out-of-context number because of all this electronic trading. This says a lot more about the stock market than it does about the real economy.
Well, I think you've said the stock market follows the real economy, and the White House has put out a word, the long economic forecast, and you're a forecaster from their perspective, and we'll hear later about the political dimension of this, looks good. In fact, the fundamentals remain, and this is not necessarily from the White House, but most economists, I wonder if you essentially would give your imprimatur to this, look pretty good. We're on an economic growth path, slight, but nevertheless a path, low unemployment and more wages for workers.
That's exactly right. And ultimately, that's why I kind of look at this stock market swoon and say there's no there there, and almost assuredly, even if we think the stock market is in bubble territory, and I think that there is some credible evidence that suggests we're getting close to that, if we're not there already, it's irrelevant because the stock market bubble won't truly pop until there are actual real economy problems, and those simply aren't existent right now.
Well, we're talking about this vacillation and volatility in the market with Christopher Thornburg, who's founding partner of Beacon Economics and director of the Center for Economic Forecasting at UC Riverside. And let me bring Annie Mass into this. She's a reporter with Bloomberg News. How much is the economy really tied to the world economy here, the global economy? I mean, we've been hearing a lot of strengths because the global economy was strong, but that's fluctuating too, isn't it, Annie?
Yeah, you have seen tremors in global markets. So it wasn't just a U.S. phenomenon. You really saw this spread. This really had a ripple effect yesterday. And the timing has been funny on the U.S. side because you've seen Donald Trump tout how his presidency has been such a boon to the stock market and such evidence that the economy is booming, and all of a sudden it is paired starkly with this huge market sell-off yesterday, continuing with the warbles that we're seeing today.
Well, help us understand the relationship, if you could, between, well, the stock market and the bond market, because on Monday there was a lot of selling off of stocks into bonds.
Sure, that's right. One thing that's been interesting is the rolling together of different kinds of market structures. And you've seen with the kind of evolution of the stock market, especially with the emergence of ETFs that can include various different markets and roll them into the equity market, you've seen a lot of different kinds of markets wrapped up together and affecting each other even more. So one big thing we've seen today is this folding of a volatility-linked ETN at Credit Suisse. And so what's been really interesting to see is how these volatility strategies that had become, betting against volatility had kind of become commonplace or a little bit more accepted, a little bit more normal. You know, those products really took a hit yesterday and today.
Well, I always think about fear and how that helps at least move panic forward. And Janet Yellen was kind of the fairy godmother of bull markets. That's what she was described as. How much of this volatility has to do, in your judgment, with her being out and Jerome Powell replacing her as the head of the Federal Reserve?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think it would be a little bit too premature to say that him coming in means that it was a catalyst for the sell-off. But it's true that, you know, with a new Fed chair, you have the potential for different monetary policy and maybe, you know, stricter than or tighter than expected monetary policy than we previously predicted. So it could be playing into some of these tremors, too.
We have Annie Massey on the phone, reporter for Bloomberg News. Could you say something also about the different markets? I mean, the energy sector, for example, had one of the worst S&P 500s. It fell almost 4.5%.
Yeah, I would really say that the phenomenon is not just, stocks specific only. You really saw energy markets be affected by this, too. And, you know, the benefit has really been for the safe haven assets in this kind of environment.
Well, I know there are many of you who are listening to this broadcast who have questions about the market or have something you'd like to put into this conversation. Let me give you a phone number that you can call and join the program live. That toll-free number is yours. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your call, so feel free to call us now. Again, you can do that at 866-733-6786, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or a Sirius satellite. That's the number to call. You can also email any questions or comments you have. Forum at kqed.org is our email And you can also post any questions or comments right onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is at KQED Forum. We'd certainly be interested in hearing your thoughts about the economy and the volatility of the economy and where it's headed, particularly with that rather dramatic drop that we saw the other day. But it's not in big numbers. You know, it's been called historic and all that, Chris Thornburg. But the reality is it's not even, what, in the top 25 when you analyze it?
Well, I mean, look, you can look at it in on a quote-unquote point basis, and it looks large. But, you know, that's just an illusion. If you look at it for percentage terms, again, this is kind of on par with the four other market swoons we've seen since 2009, 2010. You know, it's double digit, and so yeah, kind of same old, same old.
Well, let me ask you about how this ties in. We're going to be talking with Callum Borchers, who is a politics and media reporter for the Washington Post. But how do you see this tying in with President Trump, who is taking credit for all of the rise in stocks and how exceedingly well the stock market was doing? He was really bragging about it.
When you presidents have in general a tendency to take too much credit for good things happening in the economy, and they love to blame somebody else for the bad things happening in the economy. When realistically, presidents don't have that much influence over the short run movements of the economy. When you think about the economy of 2017 and really even coming into 2018, everything we're seeing now is the continuation of trends that started many years ago. The Trump administration has had almost no real influence on this economy one way or the other. And so whether they try to take credit for good things and try to blame Obama for bad things, it's just noise. There's nothing realistic there. Now, it isn't to say an administration doesn't have an impact on an economy. It does, but it takes years for that impact to truly be seen. In many ways, you could almost put, shall we say, the giant bubble of the early part of last decade, you could trace that back to changes in the economy made under the Clinton administration. And it may be very true that we will see positive and or negatives from the Trump administration after Trump is long gone. So, for me, I just kind of try to ignore this because it is such nonsensical chatter coming really, again, from any part of the political system right now.
Well, they called it the Trump bump. Annie Massa, let me get you on this. How much do you think this is really affecting the market, that is President Trump?
I would agree that, broadly speaking, you don't – the president takes credit usually for – a lot more of the good things in the economy than is necessarily warranted. But there was an expectation, I will say, coming into Trump's presidency that you were going to see a rollback of regulations, a more, quote-unquote, business-friendly environment. And so I think that's why you saw this Trump bump that people talk about. It was the expectation of this great booming business environment. But, you know, as we've seen in the past 2 days, that's certainly not, you know, an impermeable phenomenon, you know?
Well, what about the fact that taxes were cut and regulations have been cut? I mean, that may have been responsible, it is in many people's minds, for this, what's been called the Trump bump.
That's true. So tax policy, you've definitely seen companies of all sorts already trumpeting what they're going to do with the saved money in taxes. So that has, I would say, led to a general feeling of, you know, that this is a business-friendlier outlook with a tax reform passed.
And Chris Thornburg, if I can go back to you, I'm just wondering about, well, this downturn correction may be inevitable. We still have the debt ceiling and we still have the budget showdown. And the last time we had something along those lines, the S&P took away AAA rating.
Yeah, and that may very well happen again, as the case may be. Obviously, there's no real reason for these phenomenal debates raging back and forth in D.C. outside of the crazy political partisanship that we're seeing in the system right now. To your point, it may well be ugly enough that we will indeed see the rating agencies start to make noise about it. But I would argue that the real issues for the federal government are not now, but they're going to be coming up in the next 5, 6, 7 years, in as much as we're about to see unprecedented retirement on the part of the boomers. And, you know, the CBO has been predicting for any number of years now that 2018 is kind of the high water mark for the budget deficit, and things are going to get progressively worse. So for those of you who are thinking that these budget battles we're seeing now are ugly, wait, it's going to get a lot worse.
Heartening to hear. We're going to take some calls here. And by the way, yeah, you can lend your voice by joining us at 866-733-6786. We'll start with Greg. Greg, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm just really perplexed by your guest to be saying there's no there there. Since Trump has been in office, the dollar has declined almost 16%. Wage growth has grown, but the cost of living has excelled way past that. So I'm not really sure where he's thinking this isn't happening.
Yeah. Chris Thornburg?
Well, first of all, we have to be a little cautious about when you say that the cost of living has accelerated much faster. That's actually not true in any way, shape, or form. The only place you may be seeing a trend like that is in the Bay Area itself. And, of course, that entire comment boils down to the lack of housing and skyrocketing housing costs. But for the rest of the United States, in fact, over the last couple of years, there's been very good wage growth. That's been, I think, one of the big, just completely incorrect conversations about our economy, this idea that Americans have not been seeing wage gains. They absolutely have. In fact, if you look at some of the numbers from the Atlanta Fed, they suggest over the last 3 years, for people who are fully employed last year, the previous year compared to this year, on average, they're seeing a little less than a 4% increase in wages in real terms.
Isn't there a fear, though, Chris, that more wages means more spending, and more spending means higher prices, and that could indeed lead to inflation?
That's exactly right. So Wall Street has in their head this idea of what we call wage-led inflation. And the argument is, wow, with wages going up, inflation suddenly becomes a big risk. And when inflation kicks in, the Fed gets aggressive, and interest rates go up, and that's bad for corporate bottom lines. I understand the kind of reasoning, but I would take a step back and say, well, let's look at the reality of that sort of chain of events. First of all, is there truly this giant spike in nominal wage gains? And as already noted, the answer is no, not really. We had 1 month, and it's a month that can't be trusted, because it's January and the seasonal adjustment problems are acute. So we have 1 month worth of data in terms of wages, which is just not enough to give us any kind of sense of things. Second thing is actually the relationship between wages and inflation is nowhere near as palpable as the markets seem to believe. It's one of these odd little conventional wisdoms on Wall Street that in the data is not conventional, nor is it wisdom. And then the third thing is let's look at other indicators of inflation. Take, for example, PCE or the CPI measures of inflation. Those are both below 2%. There's no inflation right now. Look at money supply growth. M2 growth, which is our broad measure of monetary conditions, M2 growth has been decelerating over the last 6, 7, 8 months. And right now, money supply growth is as weak as it's been since the middle of the Great Recession. If anything, if you put aside the labor numbers, and you took an objective look at where we are from a price standpoint, you would actually argue that deflation seems to be a slightly larger risk right now than inflation.
That's a sensible argument, but let me go to Annie Mass on this, because the markets don't necessarily follow rationality or logic. In fact, there's a great deal of fear. Isn't there any that we can pinpoint in the markets, not only of inflation, but interest rates going up?
Sure, yeah. I mean, we've long been expected to be in a zone of monetary policy tightening now. And so, I mean, I think that's definitely playing in the expectation of tightening monetary policy going forward this year. And I guess one question is, could it be happening at a rate that we didn't necessarily expect before? Could it actually be a little bit more quick than people were expecting?
Yeah, well, let me bring another caller aboard. Vinod joins us next. Vinod, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, Mike. My question is, what is a good sign of an economic indicator? So we have a good job growth. and good wage increase, but the market goes down. There is something wrong in the Middle East, the market goes down. So my second question is, as the gentleman said, always the January indicator for the job growth is not a good sign. Don't the big brokers who manage trillions of dollars don't know that that's not a good indicator for this high drop in the market?
Thank you for those, actually, two-part question there. Let me go to you, Chris Thornburg. I mean, he wants to know about good economic indicators, and then we'll hear from Annie Massa.
Yeah, well, in terms of good economic indicators, one of the things to keep in mind is that the day-to-day movements of the stock market aren't a very good reflection of the real economy. We've sort of bought into this Wall Street-created myth that the market knows all, sees all, that the market is smarter than us as individuals, that somehow or other it tells us things about the world we may not recognize ourselves. And the exact opposite is true. The market tends to be reactive, not proactive. And while it is true that markets tend to take a big dump in the middle of downturns, understand that more often than not, the recession starts and the market follows. I like to go back to the giant sell-off that we saw back in 2008, which occurred in the third quarter. It's worth pointing out that the recession began in Q1, and in fact, there are all sorts of signs of a very weak economy in 2007, yet it took the market over a year and a half to respond to that. The market tends to get it right in the long run, but in the short run, it does lots of things that you can't trace to anything in the real economy.
Well, let me hear from Annie on this, because I'm right up on a break here. Annie Massa?
Yeah, I would say I would echo the idea that there are economic indicators that just day-to-day fluctuations of the market aren't going to tell you about. Sure, there's a response to jobs numbers, but there's so much more going on in the economy than just what the stock market is doing on any given day. And you also have to look at it in the context of what it does over a longer period of time, right? More than just getting wrapped up in the day-to-day, plunges in value or the day-to-day kind of fluctuations like this.
Well, the caller did mention job growth. How much do you think that's really tied to fluctuations in the long run or even in the short run? Perhaps the short run is more important here.
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly strong job growth is something you want to see, but it's also a sign of a growing and healthier economy. The question, though, then is, since we've been in such an incredibly low interest rate environment, these signs that the economy is strengthening might, lead to interest rates going up over time.
Well, we are going to continue this discussion. We're going to hear from more of you, our listeners. We're also going to talk with Callum Borchers, who is a politics and media reporter for The Washington Post, and see how much this has to do with politics or will affect politics. So stay tuned. You can also, again, join us by emailing us forum@kqed.org or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle's @KQED Forum. We have Christopher Thornburg with us from Beacon Economics and Annie Massa from Bloomberg News. And you, when we return, I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The Dow dropped almost 1,200 points on Monday, and we're talking about what that means and looking at some economic forecasting and looking at some causes behind the effects of that as the market continues to fluctuate and carry a great deal of volatility. Christopher Thornburg's with us. He's founding partner of Beacon Economics and an independent economic research and consulting firm headquartered in Los Angeles. And we're going to go to your calls and emails and remind you that you can join us and let us know your own thoughts about the economy by calling in at 866-733-6786 or emailing us forum@kqed.org or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. I want to go to Callum Borchers, who is politics and media reporter with The Washington Post, and bring him into this conversation. And Callum Borchers, welcome to Forum. Glad to have you.
Glad to be with you.
Well, I guess I'd like to find out from you in the way of thoughts, and there's been a lot of forecasting, though, is how a kind of downturn like this, or continued downturns for that matter, and fluctuations affects President Trump, who's been taking enormous credit. And I think the word bragging would not be inappropriate here for how the economy had been doing and bubbling up and so forth. When it falls, presumably he falls. It's in the economy, stupid.
You would think so. The complicating factor is that polling, until very recently, has continued to show that more Americans still view this as the carryover Barack Obama economy more than the Donald Trump economy. Our latest poll with ABC News a couple of weeks ago showed that more people still think that the current economic conditions have more to do with policies under the previous administration, because, of course, we're barely a year into the Trump era. And so, you know, part of the president's campaign over the last year, really even since Election Day, he started taking credit, remember, for a surge in consumer confidence and a market uptick even before he was sworn into office. So he's been trying to convince the public for a while now that this is his economy and his stock market. Voters haven't necessarily bought into that idea just yet. And now that we're seeing sort of a pullback in the last couple days of trading, it's not entirely clear to me whether that blame will be thrown at his feet or not, because the credit wasn't necessarily being given to him either. But of course,
well, the stock market really did begin to rise at the end. I mean, the end of the last recession was 2009. After that, right? Started to go up.
It's been on a steady, yeah, it's been a steady increase, not just in the last year or year and a half, but really the last 8 years for sure.
But how does this work in terms of his base? You know, he'd been exulting about all of the market turn upward and so forth. I mean, particularly if things start going the other way, barely a third of the families in the bottom 50% of wage earners in the United States are invested in any way, either directly or indirectly, into the market. A lot of them hate Wall Street.
Sure they do. And so that's been sort of part of the oddity of this messaging from the president. He largely plays to the indirect investors that you describe, which may still be a minority of his base, but he will sometimes, if he's out stumping, say, you know, look at your 401ks, look how well it's doing. This is, sort of thanks to my election. In fact, he said at one point on Twitter that the markets would have tanked had the Democrats won in 2016. And so what he's sort of trying to do is use the stock market as kind of a rough analog for the economy as a whole, right? So perhaps you, Joe voter, who is a Trump supporter, you may not be an investor yourself, or perhaps you don't even have a retirement account that has stocks in it, but you should feel good about the direction of the economy writ large based on what you see in the stock market. That has been the message from this White House.
Well, we're getting messages from our listeners, and just let me read one of them and get your response. Again, we have Callum Borchers with us from the Washington Post. Sarah writes, one of our listeners, every time conservative Republican economic policies have been implemented, a huge recession has followed, including but not limited to the George W. Bush Great Recession of 2008, the 1929 Herbert Hoover Great Depression, and the first Reagan-Bush recession. Inevitably, the deficits, unemployment, depressed markets, and poverty caused by Republican policies have to be fixed by a Democrat, and the Obama boom saved us from the Bush Great Recession. But will we be able to survive the conservatism of a Ryan McConnell Trump domination? That's pretty partisan in terms of the phrasing of it, but let me get your response to that, Kira.
Yeah, I mean, those are some good examples. I would say that's perhaps not the entire picture, and obviously the market has gone up and down under presidents of both parties. So that feels like a little bit of a selective history to me. But I think that, again, what you see here is that, you know, there are many factors, right, that can influence the market's ups and downs. The president is one of them, but only one. And certainly right now, with a president who's barely a year into his first term, it's really difficult to gauge Trump's effect on the stock market. What I'm sort of most interested in observing is just politically whether he pays any price for this or not. And as I said off the top, it's not clear to me that he will, partly because voters didn't necessarily tie him to the stock market in the first place, and secondly because he is incredibly skilled, as we've seen over and over again, at kind of slipping out of traps that might ensnare other politicians. You know, I was struck by the commentary yesterday of Jay Carney, the former press secretary to Barack Obama, who said something like, we never touted the stock market gains, because we understood that if you claim the rise, then you own the fall, right? I mean, it would seem to be a very basic principle. I'm just not sure that that would be true for this president. He's very good at saying something that perhaps contradicts a previous claim and getting away with it.
We're talking about the economy. Callum Borcher is with us, politics and media reporter for The Washington Post, and Christopher Thornburg, founding partner of Beacon Economics and director of the Center of Economic Forecasting at UC Riverside, and Annie Massa, reporter with Bloomberg News. And Annie Massa, got a comment here about a question that is pretty fascinating in some ways. Michael says, how much did computer algorithms play into the record-setting stock market decline?
So the stock market, one thing people might not realize is the stock market is basically entirely electronic right now. This image that you have in your head of shouting down on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, I mean, the real trading is going on based on computer algorithms and servers in basically warehouses in New Jersey. So that's where really the, you know, the stock market's information is being processed. One thing that people point fingers to is that maybe some kinds of sell-offs can be exacerbated by automated strategies, but I would just caution that, you know, that might be, those kinds of arguments might be made without the knowledge that the entire stock market is completely electronic. So, you know, the arguments that it's all the algos or it's all the, you know, electronic market makers isn't necessarily painting the whole picture of what our current stock market looks like.
Well, we're getting a lot of comments from listeners, Annie, about how this boom only is benefiting a few and the volatility is caused by the wealth being centralized. Get your thoughts on that?
Yeah, the volatility aspect is a really interesting part of this. It's true that these esoteric products that bet for against volatility, especially against volatility, since we've been in such a depressed volatility environment for a long time, have become more popular over time. And we just saw a huge reversal in the fortunes of those kinds of funds yesterday, because you saw a couple of products basically collapse under the pressure of betting against volatility the minute that you see it spike like that. And today you've seen Cboe controls the VIX, the, you know, fear index of Wall Street. And Cboe's had its own kind of really tough day in the stock market. Its prices plunged as much as 17% today as a few worries percolate over the future of these volatility-linked products.
Yeah, I want to read a few of our listener comments along these lines. Mike writes, I always wonder whether the ever-ballooning valuation of investments is an indication that there's too much money in the hands of too few. Wouldn't it be better if this money were in the hands of consumers? What's going to happen if this trend of more money for companies, less money for consumers continues? And a tweet from another listener says, is wage growth happening if you eliminate the income of the top 1%? So a lot of people thinking along those lines. Let me bring some more of our callers along, and we go next to Ravi. Ravi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking my question. My general observation, I guess, for the history, 50, 60 years, the long-term bonds are around 5%, and there's more money into fixed income. More people have, I guess, distributed income than just stocks. Isn't that a good thing? The stock market kind of goes down a little bit. People can put money in fixed income and have a little more.
Let me go to Christopher Thornburg on this. Thank you, Robbie, for the question. Go ahead, Chris Thornburg.
I missed a little bit of that, but I think in general we have to separate two different things, and this is kind of, I think, responding to the caller as well as a couple of those comments that you read offline. There's income inequality and there's wealth inequality. And candidly, the tightness of the labor market we've seen over the course of the last year is, it's a tide that is truly lifting all boats. Workers at all skill levels are seeing pay increases right now. In fact, I would argue the labor markets have been about as strong as they've been in the last 20 years. right now. And yes, there are a lot of people benefiting from that, and we should all be happy about that. That's an entirely separate conversation than conversations about wealth inequality, which is not the distribution of income, but of course, who's holding all the value of these assets, whether it's homes or stocks or businesses or whatever. And that, of course, is a very scary place. The 2016 Survey of Consumer Finances for the Federal Reserve came out just a few months ago, and it said that basically the top 1% of Americans own 40% of all wealth. That's basically the highest it's ever been since they started this survey in the 80s, and indeed likely to be the highest number since before World War II. So from a wealth standpoint, yeah, there's fewer and fewer people owning more and more wealth, and any political economist will tell you that that trend is extremely dangerous. Now, it isn't to say that people below that aren't benefiting. They are. But this, you know, giant increase in asset prices is truly benefiting mainly this small echelon of people. And that's not a good trend for our economy to be in.
And Christopher Thornburg is founding partner of Beacon Economics. And let me go to a question for you, Callum Borchers. Callum Borchers, again, is politics media reporter of the Washington Post. One of our listeners, James, says, if rising wages cause the market to fall and Trump and the GOP tout the performance of the stock market, doesn't that mean they're against rising wages?
Well, they would certainly say no to that, but I do see the potential conflict there. I do think that what you're seeing, and as Christopher was mentioning earlier, is sort of this tension between sort of a short-term burst in income and kind of a longer-term wealth. And you see that gap in the way the president politically has been selling his tax cuts, right? Since the end of last year, you've had a lot of corporations handing out bonuses, which are great. The employees will be thrilled to get them, but they're different from raises, right? So that's not actually going to in the long run, increase the wealth of those households. It's going to be a short-term boost. And I think that you've seen lots of folks who are maybe critical of the tax cuts saying, well, what you really want to see is sort of a longer-term wage growth there. And I think that so there is sort of a tension in the way the White House is selling these different economic indicators. And as your caller notes, sometimes the rise of one can depress another.
And let me go back to Annie Massa. Annie Massa, I'm wondering what you would tell the average investor to do about all this volatility.
Well, that's a very good question. If I were an investor myself, I would have more to say on it than just being a journalist. But
well, being a journalist, you may have more value in this than the investor. Yeah, go ahead.
I guess. I mean, one thing that I would say is important to keep in mind is just the context. You know, we saw stock prices hitting such highs, such low volatility for so long that this panic has really jolted people awake. But at the same time, if you take it in the context of the broader economy and what's been going on, that's kind of what's led to this jolt. Like, the drop has been so large because the stock market has flown to such heights in the recent past. So, you know, I would say that it's okay to take this all like in context and not panic in the short term.
Let me read a couple more listener comments here. Dale writes, the pattern has been clear over the last 30 years. Republicans come in, lower the tax rate, increase deficit spending, artificially pump up the economy, and then scrape the cream off the top. Then a Democrat will get elected and begin rebuilding the economy while being abused by the GOP. Of course, we haven't even said anything about we talked earlier about the bond market, but how everything's going to affect bonds with respect to all of the lending that has gone on with respect to this budget. But Alan writes, workers finally get a modest raise and the market tanks based on inflation, rate hike fears. What a system. Let me get some more callers on here, and let me go to Michigan and welcome Jackie. Jackie, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. I'm from the Bay Area originally. I moved to Michigan about 8 years ago for work. And we always talk about the economy and cost of living and interest rates and increases in income in terms of the national perspective. And I always hear, except the Bay Area and it being its own unique case. So I'm wondering, what can we expect in the Bay Area? I have a lot of family back there. in terms of growing wages and, like I said, interest rates and cost of living in the next few years?
Yeah, thank you for the question. That's right in Chris Thornburg's territory. Chris Thornburg?
Well, I mean,
he's in L.A., but he studies the Bay Area economy.
Well, that's true. I do a ton of work in the Bay, obviously, and but putting that to one side. We talk about the Bay Area economy being a little bit of its own beast, not because it's disconnected from the rest of the economy. Of course, it's highly connected. It's just that it's such a high-income economy. There's so many skilled workers, particularly in the West Bay. Wages have been going through the roof in large part because tech has been such a powerful force for growth locally and nationally, and it's centered in the Bay Area. But I think it's a mistake to say that somehow or other it's not connected to the broader economy. Of course it is. And at some level, this market swoon could have some impact on the Bay Area if indeed it continues. And because in general, if the market declines, you tend to see a slowdown in business investment behind it. And, of course, business investment is a big driver of the Bay Area economy. But, of course, we shouldn't worry about that because I am fairly certain that this swoon will not continue. Quite the opposite. I think in a couple weeks, this is going to be a distant memory.
Well, let me bring some more callers in. And Barbara, thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Good morning. Given the volatility of the market, up or down, how are we not sure that there isn't a foreign entity manipulating the markets and given the discussion regarding algorithms? And I'll take my question off the air.
All right. Annie Massa.
So the fluctuations of the stock market, even a very large rise or fall, like the one that we saw yesterday, are normal, even though they cause, you know, they cause a bit of panic and you don't want to look at your 401k. But I will say, as someone who covers electronic trading and these exchanges, the layers of regulation that they have to comply with are pretty steep. And they do, I will say, take market manipulation extremely seriously. It would be a number one concern to have any kind of cybersecurity loophole in there anyway, just for the integrity of the market, but also because you would receive enormous regulatory penalties for having even the possibility, even weaknesses in your system where a bad actor could get in. So for their own financial protection, they are incented to make sure that, they're not being manipulated. So I would say that fears of a bad foreign actor manipulating the market or trying to purposefully make it go lower would be extremely hard in such a vast and protected system.
Agree with that wisdom, Christopher Thornburg?
Yeah, well, I'm sorry for making noises over here. I'm laughing because we do have bad actors in the system. It's the people running those exchanges. For anybody who hadn't had an opportunity to read Michael Lewis's Flash Boys that came out a couple of years ago, which is about these high-speed exchanges and all the things that go on in these dark pools and how these traders are often, trade ahead of big purchases for their own benefit. I mean, the bad stuff happening in the system right now is palpable on the part of the actors who are driving these electronic systems. We don't need Russian interference to have a problem.
Okay. You want to give some advice to one of our listeners here, Christopher Thornburg? Raj says, I have an aggressive 401k with close to 60% in U.S. equity funds.
Yeah.
It obviously took a big hit over the last few days. Any advice for me? Should I reallocate my money or sit tight?
No, just sit tight. Yeah. Sit tight. Look, you can't.
I want to finish this sentence here.
Yeah.
Or sit tight
sorry,
for.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
No, but it's kind of funny. Yeah. So should I reallocate my money or sit tight for some more time, entertaining myself with some acid reflux? So.
You can't time the market, and you're going to have this day-to-day volatility that is largely driven by noise, not driven by true economic underlying factors. In fact, this last Nobel Prize was given out to Richard Thaler. And he is a big believer in behavioral psychology, and he shows that when people pay attention to their stock portfolios, they trade excessively, and they end up hurting themselves financially. And in many ways, the best thing investors can do is to stop looking. And it's an interesting lesson, I think, that this person will probably, because there's no point in getting upset about this, because this is likely to be gone in a few days. Ultimately, your best bet is to stop paying attention. It's the kind of thing you look at once a year or once every couple of years. You just can't respond to this day-to-day stuff, because the only thing you do is give yourself stress. And you're not actually doing yourself any favors.
Well, this dovetails with a comment from a listener named David who says, let's please keep this latest market drop in perspective. It's a very minor correction given the gains of the past 7 years. And we are talking about the global stock markets with Annie Massa, reporter for Bloomberg News, Christopher Thornburg, who is founding partner of Beacon Economics, and Callum Borchers, who is politics and media reporter for The Washington Post. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to more of your calls. Let me go next to Steve in San Francisco. Steve, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Thanks for the call. So when I look at the total market over the past 7 years, I mean, it's been doing very well, obviously. And if you look at 2017 specifically, we had about a 20 to 30% return in 2017. So I don't want to say I called the top, but to me it was very apparent that you can go to cash throughout all of 2018 and still have a two-year return of about 10 to 15%. So I had no problem going to cash in the beginning of 2018.
So you're asking about liquidity then? Or?
Yeah, I mean, to me it seems okay to go to cash. Like if you're uncertain about the market, I feel like enough people just don't realize that it's okay to hold cash if you feel like the market's frothy.
What do you think about that, Annie Massa?
It all depends on your investment strategy, I guess I would say. For different strategies work for different people. So, you know, some might be comfortable going that route, but others, want to be invested. So I guess it's just different for everyone.
Agree, Chris Thornburg?
Yeah, look, I mean, what's the old warning on every TV commercial: past returns are no indication of future performance. You know, you have to be guessing about the future, not the past.
Let me thank the caller. Let me go back to Callum Borchers. You know, I was looking back historically, Callum Borchers, and you look at the different things that happened when the stock market soared or fell with Carter, with Reagan. In fact, it affected the presidency and affected certainly the legislative configuration and a surging economy, a falling market. Well, LBJ lost 47 House seats, as I recall. I mean, the reality here is these markets rise and fall, and they do affect politics. They do have an enormous impact on politics, and one can expect that with the midterm election, right?
Sure they do. And it's the old political axiom that it's the economy, stupid, right? And there's a lot of truth to that. And I think that you saw that in the way the Republican tax bill was set up at the end of last year. A lot of the tax cuts for lower and middle earners are front-loaded in this tax bill, right? And you've heard, even though the tax bill was polling poorly at the beginning, the message to voters from the beginning and into early this year has been start to look at your paycheck in February. Well, February is here, and I think that a lot of folks will indeed be opening up their first paychecks this month, and they probably will in many cases see at least some a bump in their earnings. And that is not by accident. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's pure political cynicism, but very clearly this was part of a strategy by Republicans to try to set themselves up well for the midterm elections this year and, of course, in 2020 as well.
Well, here's a listener who ties things to the Trump administration. Let me get your response, Callum Borchers. He writes, the Trump administration's tax overhaul is the latest piece of good news for the global economy. The International Monetary Fund said Monday that it expects global growth of 3.9% this year. It would be the quickest expansion since 2011.
Well, I think that there
confirm
may be some truth to that.
Callum?
Chris,
yeah.
I think it's Chris might even be better positioned to answer the question, but I certainly have seen some counter thinking as well, which is that some of the rise, at least in our own stock market, was based on the expectation that this tax bill would be coming, that the corporate tax rate would be lower, but that once it actually became a reality, you didn't sort of have that same build up in anticipation that perhaps that was kind of a high point. I'd be curious to know if Chris.
Yeah, your thoughts, Chris.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the market market was, in general, building in the idea that there was going to be some corporate tax cut, and that's exactly what they got. I would also argue that this will be a good year for growth, in part because of these tax cuts, because this is, in fact, a deficit-driven decrease in taxes, or borrowing money where it's broadly fiscal stimulative, which I think actually, if I may, and I don't want to turn the corner too rapidly here from this topic, but I do think it's worth coming back to the Fed, because in many ways, when you look at what the Fed's been doing in terms of tightening, despite the fact that 10-year bonds are so low, we could argue that a lot of the Fed's strong reaction is driven by the fear of another big market bubble. Perhaps this sell-off will actually make the Fed kind of take a step back. But again, I think it depends on how long this sell-off actually lasts. I'm inclined to say in a week or two where this is going to be forgotten.
You think big changes with Jerome Powell in store or unlikely?
No, I think it's going to be more of the same. I think he is worried about bubbles. I think he's worried about deregulation and a stimulated full employment economy. I think there's lots of reasons that the Federal Reserve is worried about the financial markets, and that's why they're getting aggressive. And I think that in the midst of all this chaos over the stock market, we're ignoring what I think are very important and dramatic actions on the part of the Fed.
Well, that'll be the final word. We will obviously continue to follow the economy. Chris Thornburg, always good to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
And thank you, Annie Massa. Annie Massa joined us from New York, reporter of the Bloomberg News. Good to have you with us on Forum this morning, Annie.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you to Colin Bershers, who joined us from Washington Politics, a media reporter at Washington Post. Good to have you with us as well. Thank you.
It was my pleasure.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.